Happy Mondays. Fan pregame, Sportsnet 590, the fan for the next hour. We're going to have John Morosi and Natalie Spooner join us. Kind of the two pillars of our discussions today. We've got PWHL team names to go through, which is exciting. And, of course, Bo Bichette making headlines. He wants to be a Blue Jay.
And he does. He wants to be a Blue Jay. Yeah, big news from Shai Davidi today with Bo Bichette, I guess, reaffirming his desire, if it had been affirmed, to be a Toronto Blue Jay. We've got Shai Davidi on Jays Talk Plus speaking on the matter. He's making the rounds today. So why don't we hear from Shai?
Sure. As you mentioned, Shai a little earlier talking to Blake on Jays Talk Plus. He's also got a great article up on Sportsnet.ca. Which you should read as well to kind of get some context. But let's hear from Shai a little earlier.
During the trade deadline, he was forced to consider his future as all the speculation was swirling around him. And he really feels like he wants to play with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. forever, wants to do that with the Blue Jays, and wants to win a championship with them. And this is something that the two of them have been talking about together since they were teenagers in low A ball. Now that his contract is on the verge of expiring, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is on the verge of free agency. This trade deadline, I think, really drove that home to Bo Bichette that this may not be forever, and he hopes that that will certainly be the case.
Okay, so this sit down with Shai and the quotes that Shai got from Bo Bichette definitely have made the news cycle today, and probably for the rest of this time before Bo actually gets back on the field. His rehab assignment is going to start tomorrow, and he's projected to return maybe this weekend or early next week. So what is next for Bo performance-wise? We know he's going to try to get back into the Blue Jays lineup. This wasn't always a guarantee, but it looks like he's on a good projection to do that. But I think that these quotes, specifically from somebody who doesn't speak much about his future, and we know Bo is a bit more guarded than Vladdy, if we're comparing the two, I think these are very purposeful. And I think there's like an end goal with this, possibly.
Okay, what's the end goal then?
Well, when I first read this, I think my first initial response was, I was surprised, because I don't think that I would put Bo as the most outspoken and passionate Blue Jay if I had to compare all of the Blue Jays. Like, I think he's a bit more stoic. So this is like guaranteeing he wants to be a Blue Jay. He wants to play with Vladdy, so he's hooking himself to Vladdy in a sense of like they have decided that they want to do this together. They want to win. They're 100% committed to being a part of this organization. And I didn't feel that way when I watched Bo's body language or I watched Bo play baseball this year. And we haven't got to see Bo play as much baseball as we had hoped. So that to me is something that I'm just reading between the lines. But I think it's calculated, and maybe that's not, like, maybe that's has a harsh connotation, like using the word calculated, but I think it is.
Yeah, I think rehab injury, rehab image is sort of the play here for Bo Bichette, who I haven't seen, as you mentioned, since late July. There has to be a level of posturing here and taking back control of a situation that is somewhat spiraling, because it's difficult being a man without country. And if Bo Bichette was allowing or going to allow this process to continue, a process which has kind of separated him from the Toronto Blue Jays, well, he loses some leverage. This is like, it goes against, it runs counter, and I guess that's why he comes out, to what everyone's been sort of saying and thinking, and what the fan base has been basically coming to grips with, is that, yeah, it's Vlad, and it's not going to be Bo, and what's going to be the end result with Bo, I'm not really sure, and I'm not really sure what Bo Bichette's intentions are here, but I do think hitching himself back to this team is the best way for him to gain more control of this situation, like, especially with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's saying, hey, yeah, it's him and we're ride or die. It's him and I, and we want to be a part of the Toronto Blue Jays. Are you, the organization, really going to break that up? Are you not going to allow your fans to see these two talents grow together? We want to be here. You're going to take that away. I think he's just taking back a measure of control here. And, you know, at the end of the day, actions speak louder than words. And although Bo Bichette has said he wants to be a Toronto Blue Jay, like, everything we've seen and kind of picked up through osmosis or whatever has been that maybe it's not been that way. So I guess I'm looking at it a little bit more in the cynical side, but I feel like this was, you know, you're sitting back and you're watching the narrative and the storyline grow, and you're not a part of it. Taking back control and making sure, as I said, rehabbing a little image while you're rehabbing a little injury.
I think it puts the organization in a very interesting spot because, as you mentioned, you know, Vladdy, I think a year ago we weren't having the same conversations, obviously, that we are about Vladdy. Like, Vladdy feels like a must sign this offseason. It feels like you must commit to Vladdy, and I'd be very happy to see them go that route. Bo was a question mark. He wasn't a question mark last season, but this year he became the question mark. And it's either you sign both from this feeling, is do you sign both Vlad and Bo, who seem like they want to do this partnership together? And if the organization doesn't sign Bo, Bo looks like he kind of gets off like scot-free in a sense. Like, oh, I wanted to be a Blue Jay, and they just didn't want me to be a Blue Jay. And if the organization decides to go the Bo Bichette route, then obviously he gets his money and he gets to be a Blue Jay. So I think the posturing is interesting because I think it puts the organization between a rock and a hard place in a sense. Like, you're going to let down Bo Bichette, who just publicly said he really wants to be a Blue Jay, and he's talked about this since they were 18 years old in low A, and they're 100% committed. It feels hard to pivot off of that when one of your superstars wants to be with the organization. So I think it's interesting timing, and we only have a month left of baseball, or less than that, and big decisions this offseason. It will be the biggest off-season decision to Bo versus Vlad, or both, or just one.
Yeah, I think with this move, and if it doesn't work out, it's because, yeah, the Blue Jays didn't want me. That's I wanted to be a Toronto Blue Jay, but not at that cost, right? Yeah. Like, if you're not going to give me the contract I can get on the open market, then, yeah, the allegiance only goes so far. I guess if I did the cynical approach, the positive approach would be maybe he's looked at what Vlad's done for the last 2 months and been like, I believe in Vlad again. Maybe I, like the fan base, exactly how the fan base has treated this season, how the mentals of an entire collective have kind of changed on Vlad. Yeah, everybody's all in because he seems to have figured it out, and maybe there's maybe the next notch in maturity. Maybe that's just kind of going part and parcel with, you know, him just playing as well as he has. But maybe he believes at least in one key piece, that being Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And if that's the superstar, you want to play with superstars, you want to play with someone who you believe you can win with, maybe he didn't believe a year ago, and like the rest of the fan base, maybe he believes now.
Well, I'll give you the positive spin on it as well. Like, this is probably what you want to hear when you're trying to decipher what Bo Bichette's future could be, because I think there's a lot of people that still believe in Bo Bichette, and this has been a really difficult year for him physically, obviously not playing. But the comment you made about, like, the maturity or the growth, Shai writes a really great article, as I mentioned, and some more quotes that we didn't hear in the clip was, you know, Bo talking about that learning this year. Quote, I feel like I've learned a lot more about myself through failure, whether that be on the field or maybe not feeling like I had led as good as I should have. Just a lot of reflection, seeing what I can do better. I can be better on the field. I can also be better off the field, in the clubhouse, everything. I'm just looking forward to having an opportunity to be better. Like, they're still young in their professional careers, right? And maybe this struggle, this not being able to perform at your best and not being able to perform in general by being injured, it can be like a fork in the road. Do you learn from the veterans around you? Do you learn from those that have gone through serious injury and have struggled to perform? Have you learned from a Vladdy who had a down year and now is having a great year? So maybe that is the silver lining in this, that Bo not being at his best has really put on like his big boy pants and learned about what it means to be a leader on and off the field. That's what he's saying. That's what you hope to believe. And I still think there's a positive path forward by signing both of these guys, but it has, as we said, kind of put them in a situation where all attention is now on the organization trying to make this partnership work, because who doesn't want to buy into this story of Bo and Vlad being kids growing up now wanting to win with the Toronto Blue Jays? Like, it's such a good story. I would believe in it. And now it's kind of, does the organization believe in it?
Yeah, it's almost like remember, this is how it was supposed to feel. And it hasn't felt that way for a while, but that was the hope. And that was the hope sold to the fan base those years ago when they were together on the come up. To continue this conversation, let's bring in our first guest of the day, John Morosi of MLB Network. I'm sure, John, you've heard the Bo Bichette statement through Shai Davidi. Shai Davidi making his rounds, at least on our station today. What were your thoughts when you heard Bo express his desire to stick around for the long term with the Blue Jays?
Well, Justin Ailish, great to be with you again tonight. I think this is a fascinating story, and certainly probably not the last time that we speak about Bo Bichette and his future with the Jays on this show as we look towards the offseason in 2025. what Bo said to Shai, and it was a great story by Shai, I think it serves a number of purposes. Who was the audience for this, for these statements, if you think about it this way? I think, number one, it's important that the Jays fans hear that he's committed to the city. It's important that now the organization hears that he wants to still have his future in Toronto, and that maybe there is still common ground to be found in terms of a conversation this offseason. But let's not forget, too, that there could be a larger audience here, which is the industry at large. And whether Bo signs with the Jays long-term or whether his future is somewhere else, I think it generally helps his image, perception, value in the industry for him to be a happy and forward-looking and optimistic employee, as opposed to this year just being sort of up and down and a little confusing on a number of different levels. So I think what he said today creates an environment where, yes, there's middle ground and the Jays can sign him, but if that doesn't work, for whatever reason, I think a happy Bo Bichette is more valuable in the marketplace all the way around than if it feels though it feels as though the relationship is in some way damaged. Because if the Jays feel like, and if the message were to be put out there, let's say that Bo said, "Hey, I'm not happy here. It's time to move on," the Jays have lost their leverage, and the chance of there being a good trade that maybe works out for all sides is diminished as well. So I think this was a good step, a good first step, but I'm still somewhat guarded in saying that it's going to necessarily lead to step B, which is an extension before opening day of 2025.
I'm most fascinated about how this changes, like, the dynamic between the way that the fan base is going to view the next steps with Bo Bichette and the organization, because when you read these comments that we were just saying before we brought you on, like, they talk about being 18 years old, low A, wanting to play for the Blue Jays and wanting to commit to that and wanting to commit to being Vladdy's partner through all of this. And I mean, why would you not want to love that story, right? If you're a Blue Jays fan, and now the decision whether you do extend and continue to invest in Bo Bichette or not, it looks like Bo is bought in. And if they decide not to, I feel like the fan base might be turning on the front office for breaking up the band and not believing in Bo Bichette. So I think that the statements through Shai Davidi and the way that Bo was speaking kind of puts more pressure on the front office to keep them together and to invest in Bo Bichette. Is that how you're viewing it?
Possibly. And I also think, Ailish, that when you consider how this season went, we can maybe pull back and have this caveat that we still haven't seen Bo play well and healthy for a big chunk of time this season. That hasn't happened. And I think that you have to look at next year. He's got one more year to prove it to everybody, to himself, to the organization, to the fans, to, again, the industry at large, to where if Bo were an MVP candidate right now and his play was speaking loudly about his place among the elite, he wouldn't have to say anything. Mm-hmm. Juan Soto doesn't have to say anything right now about how he feels about the Yankees. The numbers are the numbers. We know what Juan Soto is going to do this winter. He's going to be really, really wealthy, because he has earned that with the way that he's played this year. And Bo's resume up until this year was quite good. But at the end of the day, I think increasingly in the modern game, you really are paid for what it's expected that you're going to be able to do going forward and what the platform year says about who you are. Look at how, honestly, think about Cody Bellinger. He had some years, some really good years. He had a sort of a tough end of his time with the Dodgers. And he had to sign that one-year prove-it deal with the Cubs. And even then, he had to then, this past winter, sign a shorter-term deal. So I do think that Bo probably looks around and says, where's my next big payday coming from? And right now, unless you're going out there and putting huge numbers, the only place he can go for that is Toronto. And so I think that sort of framing things in this way probably serves his contractual needs and wishes the best. It also, I think, improves maybe the sentiment around the fans. And to your point, Ailish, if it puts more pressure on the front office, again, maybe that ups their offer as well. I mean, it's a fascinating dynamic, and we're only really going to know the full story at the end of the day once we get, if we ever get it, the contract numbers on both players, when they're signing, what they give up in terms of their future potential earnings elsewhere to sign that contract. The words are important, but the actions eventually and where the discussion points are, where the money is, I think will speak way more loudly than anything that's said on September the 9th.
Yeah, indeed. And I guess it's, you know, again, we talk about posturing. We don't know exactly why and what everything means and how everything will shake out because we don't know how everyone feels. But I guess Bo Bichette has reaffirmed his desire and his want to play with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And that's been an interesting topic for years, Bo and Vlad's relationship. We've thought at sometimes it's a little chilly. At times we thought, yeah, these are the two that's going to come up, and they were thick as thieves. Not that it really, well, it might matter, but the industry's view on their relationship and how much it matters, because he's saying, yeah, it's me and him, ride or die. But it's never felt that way for us. Has it felt like that in the industry?
You know, it's an interesting question, Justin, because when you think about it, if you look back on the last year or plus, how many images do we have of them on the field, arms locked, smiling, whether it's a celebration of a home run or something else? Do we have a lot of those memories in our mind's eye over the last year? I'm not sure that we do. And I think that's, and that you don't have to do that, by the way. And it's not a prerequisite that everybody's best friends for you to win. Again, I covered a lot of Tigers teams in Detroit with a couple alphas and Verlander and Scherzer who probably aren't necessarily best friends, but that rotation was as good as there was in the game for a long time, irrespective of their relationship. And so I think that you don't have to necessarily be best friends to win. It may help if you do. It has a little more cohesion when times aren't as good. And again, I think part of this is the relationship, the true test of a baseball relationship, I've always believed, Justin and Ailish, is when you're in it together from February through the end of October, and it's every day and you're there. When you think about it, if you're Bo right now and you're looking at it and Vlad's putting up MVP caliber numbers, you really don't have the ability to step into the clubhouse and say, this is my clubhouse, because it's kind of Vlad's clubhouse right now. Mm-hmm. Look at what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I go back to Jim Leland, as I sometimes do, the Hall of Fame manager. People would ask him again about Miguel Cabrera, who at times was a forceful personality. At times he was a little more withdrawn. And people would ask him, is Miguel being enough of a leader? And Jim, as only Jim could say, was, he would say, you know what? Leadership is when I see a whole lot of RBIs out there. That's leadership. And so on some level, when you're the sun around everything that is being revolved right now, the way that Vlad is, it's kind of hard to argue who the face of the team is and who the leader of the team is. He's there posting every day, racking up amazing numbers. And I think that Bo smartly realizes that right now Vlad is he is sort of the sun and the moon and the stars right now for the Jays. And I think that finding his peace and his place around that is both probably the right strategy and the smart strategy as you think about what Bo's future could look like.
John, we'll ask you one more about the Jays before we move on. We've got a lot of MVPs on our network tonight on Sportsnet, but one player we're not seeing at the Major League level yet is Kendry Rojas, the Blue Jays' number 12 prospect pitcher. So let us know, because I know you wanted to talk about him, so I'm excited to learn, because this might be something for Blue Jays fans to keep an eye on.
Yes, bookmark his name, Ailish, for the future, because he might be someone that potentially could get some innings in the Arizona Fall League. We haven't seen the full rosters yet. He could be a candidate there. A left-handed pitcher who right now has finished the year at High Class A Vancouver. He's moved through three levels this season. Numbers are really good. A 21-year-old from Cuba. So he, I think, is catching up on some innings in terms of just the transition to professional baseball. But he's athletic. He's been in the zone a lot. So the walk total's low, ERA, a lot of peripheral numbers, a lot of the more traditional numbers are all very encouraging. So at a time, Ailish, where a lot of the news on Blue Jays pitching prospects, whether it was Tiedemann, Barriero, there's been a lot of tough news there. I think, and even Chad Dallas also being out for the year with Tommy John surgery. Rojas is someone that I think we're going to watch very carefully and could be a name that we maybe see in the Fall League. So Kendry Rojas, keep that name in mind, and maybe we'll see him in Toronto, we can hope, sometime next year.
John, you know what we need. We need we needed an elixir.
We needed that.
Right, we needed some good
hope. So there you go. Hope is in Vancouver right now. There you go.
Kendry Rojas. Remember the name, as John Morosi states. Okay, the Mets are in town, which is exciting. New York Mets, three-game set, which means an MVP candidate is rolling through in Francisco Lindor. He is well behind Shohei Ohtani, at least in terms of the betting odds. What's the case? Like, what has to happen for Francisco Lindor to unseat a 50-50 man potentially in Shohei Ohtani? Yeah.
It's going to be tough. And I think that, so for me, I say that it's tough just because the sheer historical nature of what Shohei is doing right now is pretty extraordinary. And it'd be difficult to imagine for a likely first place team in the case of the Dodgers and a ball that Shohei hit the other day that's probably still flying somewhere over Southern California. So all these elements here for a likely first place team, I realize he's only a DH right now, which on some level limits his overall value, but come on, 50-50 is 50-50 is how I look at it. Now, with Lindor, the case, and there is a case, I'll be clear, there is a case for Lindor. The case goes something like this. He has almost single-handedly elevated the Mets lineup. He has driven in a ton of runs. He's among the league leaders. He probably will win potentially the National League RBI title. 30-homer guy. He's got as many, actually more 30-homer seasons as a shortstop than any player in the history of the game with the exception of A-Rod. So he's special. And he will likely be, if the Mets find a way to surpass the Braves, he will be the reason why. He will be. So if you look at value, basically you're the separator between a non-playoff season and a playoff season. You could argue that in Shohei's case, it's probably going to be the difference between winning the division and not, just given all the turmoil they've had in pitching. They've been without Freeman for a while. They've been without Betts at different times of the season. So I think that for what Shohei has done, the reliability is special. Batting leadoff is special. It's going to be hard. But I do think there's a case in it. And again, the defensive ability, which is premium at a premium position, Justin Ailish, there is certainly a case. I tend to think, though, that Shohei is rightfully the favorite to win that award.
Okay, so Shohei, we've got him later on Sportsnet 1. That's 10 o'clock. But 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 1, we've got Kansas City and the New York Yankees. So you've got two more MVP candidates. You've got Bobby Witt Jr. and Aaron Judge. Obviously, I think Aaron Judge is still running away with this one. But I wonder your case, the same thing. Make the case for Bobby Witt Jr. because a lot of excitement around him, and he's had an incredible season. But what Aaron Judge is doing is also pretty spectacular.
Well, Ailish, you are speaking right now to a very conflicted man because I am a voter. So I'm a voter on this award this year. So therefore, just as a proviso here, I have to be very measured in what I say because I can't reveal my ballot. And which is actually a good thing right now because I don't know who I'd vote for. I really and truly don't. And I typically, just to give a little context on this, there's only 30 voters, so I'm very grateful that I'm one of the 30 voters for this year in the American League. And one thing I always say, we're here the 9th of September, I usually wait much later before I really dive into the numbers because I never want to have a preconceived notion before the big 162 is over. And I usually sit there, whether it's with a night or two left in the season or wait until 162, and really sit down and think about it. Now, here's how I typically look at it. When you've got two position players, which is a lot easier than a DH and a position player or a pitcher and a position player, at least, or more or less, it's apples to apples. I do look at it and say, let's rate the pure performance. Put it all into the mix. Offense, defense, base running, everything. Put it all together. Rank them all. And then do I feel like at the end of the day, do I need to move someone up because they were the differentiator, as I was talking earlier about Lindor, in their team making the playoffs, winning the division, getting the number one seed, et cetera. And remarkably, in this case, you've got two players who I think have very strong cases. Even, I might say right now, equally strong cases. Judge, even though maybe his defensive analytics don't measure up to Witt's at the moment in time, remember, he's playing center field. He's like the tallest center fielder ever. And he's out there when you're 6'7" and you're playing center field, crashing into the wall, making catches. I don't necessarily care what but your defensive runs saved and things like that matter. But the fact that you're out there really matters. And then you've got Witt, who is just a complete wizard at shortstop, and 30-30, all the different things he does. I really believe this, and again, I almost purposefully have not gotten into the granular numbers yet because I don't want to get too preconceived one way or the other. I really think we're talking about a year where there are no wrong answers. And to make one point about this, I always chuckled a bit.
John, we got to go. We got about 10 seconds.
You have 10 seconds.
We gotta interrupt
when you voted Cabrera 1 and Trout 2 versus the other way around, you still vote for the two best players. It's not like I'm voting one first and one tenth. So respect to everybody. We got a great show in baseball right now. I love it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, John. Sorry I had to cut you off, but we got to take a break. We appreciate him coming on. John Morosi of MLB Network. We'll be right back with Natalie Spooner.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We finished up there with a little Bo Bichette discussion with John Morosi, but we had the biggest news of the day, maybe tied for first, were the PWHL names officially announced for season two. Obviously, a long time coming, and a lot of excitement around this, a lot of, you know, speculation of what would be. But we have the inaugural six names, starting with the Boston Fleet, the Minnesota Frost, Montreal Victoire, New York Sirens, Ottawa Charge, and the Toronto Scepters. And for everybody, there's amazing graphics online. There's a lot of information. You can check it out for each of the logos, each of the new colors that were added, the story behind the names, all of the work that went into it up on the PWHL website, and all of their own social media accounts. So everybody check that out for some more info and help us tee it all up. None other than Natalie Spooner of the Toronto Scepters. Spoons, how are you? Look at that shirt.
I know. I'm rocking it. Awesome. I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Honestly, today's been such a fun day. I saw you all over doing the rounds, so we appreciate you jumping on with us. Just walk us through knowing, I don't know how long you knew, but knowing that today was going to be another monumental day for season two of the PWHL, finally getting the names, the logos, and the excitement around getting that over with.
Yeah, so I actually only found out yesterday. Wow. So I've been just as excited as the fans and everyone else, waiting and waiting to find out the name. But I mean, it's been such an exciting day. I think really, like, we've been waiting for this. The fans have been waiting for this. So I think, you know, for us to be able to release this the way we did, and the original six finally have names and logos, it's so exciting. And I think now I just can't wait to get our jerseys and get back on the ice and, you know, be able to be called the Toronto Scepters.
Yeah. There you go. And the excitement will continue, I guess, with the jerseys and, mm-hmm. and having it to come together completely. But you mentioned we got a name, we got a logo, we got colors, we got a lot of new things. What is your favorite part mm-hmm. of the Toronto rebrand so far?
I think just like the power that comes with it, like being the Scepters, like it, to me, it's like,
it's intense.
It's very intense. Like, it's very powerful. And, you know, as like a female being able to hold a scepter, it's like almost like really empowering. So I think for us as a team, like, I think we're really going to be able to kind of rally around that. But also, I think what's the most exciting is like how the fans are going to show up with our new rebrand and our new name. Like, are they going to be showing up with scepters? Are they going to have like crowns on? And, you know, like, are they going to be like royalty?
100%.
I think you guys should have a scepter.
I was going to say, like, Spoons, I know you probably thought of this already, but your player of the game award, I don't know if you hand out something, a crown and a scepter, free, take it, run
for
with
sure.
it, decorate one of those. You're definitely walking in with a game day fit with a crown, a cape, and a scepter one of these days, right?
There you go. Game one. That's
okay,
what
perfect.
I need.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Well, I'm so glad. Like, it's been really exciting, obviously. I think there was those teases on Friday, and I saw all the royalty behind it, like Queen's Park, and like I thought maybe it'd be like the Monarchs or the Reigns. So I was really surprised to see Scepter, because first of all, I was like, okay, what is a scepter? Let me make sure I know what I'm talking about.
I was Googling this morning.
Yeah,
I don't know what
but that's like kind of the beauty of it, right? It isn't something traditional. It isn't something that we've seen before. And I wonder, like, the group chat when you guys found out, like, what's the plan? Everyone's pumped. I already saw Emma Malte with her Instagram story with the scepter. Like, it must be kind of fun.
Yeah, I think we were all definitely surprised. We had no clue like which way it was going, but we thought for sure we would have the answer in our guesses. But we didn't. We didn't. So, I mean, I think we were all like a little bit surprised, but then we're like, wow, this is really cool when you get to learn about, you know, the meaning behind it and how it relates back to mm-hmm. Toronto and Queen's Park and the Queensway, and used to be called the Queen City. So like there's so much history there. And to be able to kind of bring the, you know, the scepter into all that, it's pretty cool that it was thought of, and it's something so historic.
And with all this, you're also getting a new arena. So it's been a really exciting couple of weeks for PWHL Toronto, what we call now Toronto Scepters. So tell us about being able to be at Coca-Cola Coliseum. I know you guys got a few games there last season, but it's going to be your new home. It holds way more capacity, just having that many more fans accessible to the game. But you guys must be excited to have a new home as well.
So excited. I mean, our games, the people that got to go to our games last year at Coca-Cola, just the atmosphere there was amazing. To think of the rink and just how historic the rink is and how cool it will be. I feel like it's so fitting for our team right now. I'm just looking forward to being able to get more, you know, fans in the stands. They're passionate. They want to be in the rink. They want to cheer us on. So for our game to be more accessible, I think that that's amazing. I'm just looking forward to making it home.
We are chatting with PWHL MVP Natalie Spooner. You had off-season surgery or off-season injury that you are rehabbing. How's that going? And what do you have planned here for an encore season two, this time for the Scepters?
Yeah. It's been a different off-season, obviously, but I had surgery and all went well. So now just rehabbing and trying to strengthen back up my leg. But other than that, it's been good. Back into regular training. And this week I get back into skating. So that will be a whole other piece to add back in. But slowly getting there, I think just every day trying to feel better and get stronger. Be ready to go for the season.
I know your off-season plans obviously were disrupted with the surgery, but having the ability just to kind of get to know some of the new faces around the team. You've got Julia Gosling and Izzy Daniels, some of the big name draft picks, but also having Daryl Watts and Emma Woods, who came as free agents back to their hometown. I think, honestly, we talked about it. I gave Toronto an A when they did their draft and their free agency, because you guys like cleaned up in terms of finding value, but also grabbing some people that wanted to come back to Toronto. Like, felt like a destination, felt like unfinished business from last season. So you look at this new team and it feels like you're just bigger and better than last year.
For sure. I mean, I think we did so good in our draft and in our free agency. So I think we're going to be a really exciting team to watch, because the depth that we have is pretty unreal. If you look at the caliber of players we have, picking up Woods and Daryl Watts, like those are huge pickups in free agency. So I think we did a great job there, and just looking to build kind of off last season. I think, we did have a great season, even though, playoffs didn't go our way. So if we can just build off that into this season, I think we're going to do pretty good.
What's the main reflection for you based on last season? You've had a lot of time to think, obviously, on how successful it was. It was basically a celebration from January 1 on until the end of the season. I mean, it was a unbelievably successful launch of the PWHL. But when you're thinking more about it over the summer, because it must have been something of a whirlwind, like, what sticks out? What are you proud of? What do you look back and think on, wow, that was maybe unexpected and so, so important for this league, for this team, for the game?
Yeah, I mean, it was all a whirlwind. It went by so fast. But I think first and foremost, the fans, I think they showed up at our games. They bought the tickets, like sold them out like that. And I don't think if we would have had that same, following and fan base, it wouldn't have been as successful. So I think first of all, for them to be as passionate as they were and to show up and to really create a community around our team was so important. For us as players, it was everything we could have dreamed of, to finally be playing professional hockey and have it as a career. I think we never really thought this moment would actually come. There was just so many, wait a little bit longer. We're still working. But for it to actually be pulled together and to be so successful and to be such a great product was amazing. And I think now it's just like one after the next. It's kind of like, well, we've broken all these records. What's next? What's next? Like, there's so much excitement around it. And we just got to keep that going.
Yeah, I think year two has the potential to continue to break records, but also like to continue to like build that love of the game. First year is so easy to get excited to be at the first game, at the first sellout, and the first whatever. But now it's people are going to be remembering what happened in season one, and there's rivalries building and storylines of new players. So I'm really excited to see how much the league continues to grow this upcoming season. Now with names, it's almost good timing. You waited a whole year, now you get to be in the the spotlight again with new names. So smart on everyone's part there. Before we let you go, I want to ask you about your summer, because I know you got to go to Paris to see the Summer Olympics, which looked amazing. So what was it like for you being on the other side of it? Obviously, you're a Winter Olympian, but being able to go and enjoy the athleticism of the Summer Games and be able to be there, like, that's bucket list stuff, I'm sure. What was that like for you?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, yeah, I've never been on the other side of it. I've always been the, you know, competing athlete that can be a little bit more stressful, but just getting to go and experience it. And it made me realize just how big the Summer Games are, like, so much bigger. You know, so that's pretty cool. But then getting to see our, you know, our Canadians compete too. I got to watch us win a bronze in fencing, which I had never watched fencing before. I knew nothing about fencing. So that was pretty cool. And just to see like a bunch of sports that I would have never really watched before was amazing. We got to watch some basketball too, some beach volleyball, like just really cool atmospheres there. And all the venues were amazing. Like, you know, you're beside the Eiffel Tower, you're in like an old palais. Like, it was just so cool.
What would be your Summer Olympic sport?
If I wanted to actually be good, probably swimming.
Oh, you're a swimmer.
I swam in high school. But if I wanted to just like try something new, like, I would love to try fencing after watching it.
You could use your new scepter.
Yes.
There's a connection.
I better get practicing.
There's your connection. Fencing. Okay. Natalie Spooner, newest Olympic fencer, maybe in another life. Please appreciate you jumping. We appreciate you jumping on. Congrats on all the excitement and the success. We're looking forward to this upcoming season, and best luck with the rest of the rehab. I know it's a long process, but we're looking forward to seeing you out there soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. That's Natalie Spooner of the Toronto Scepters.
The Scepters.
See, she's got the fencing, the scepters, like, it's a regal thing. You know who would love that? Charles Davis.
I think he would.
He loves regal things. If you miss the morning show, it's a whole inside
regal
joke.
Things. Let's go through
the names. Can we put them back up on the board?
What like got your attention when you saw all this unveiled all at once this morning?
I gotta say,
breakfast television.
Yeah, so I was standing there at my television waiting to see these, because I actually didn't know, and people thought that I would know, and I didn't know anything.
I thought you knew.
I thought, first of all, it was gonna be the Toronto Monarchs. I was so pumped for the Monarchs, because I thought Marley's, Maple Leafs, Monarchs, and they teased this royal theme.
It's pretty good.
So when I saw Scepter, I was like, what is what? but I will say, hands down, Montreal nailed it. Victoire, so it's just the French word. They don't even go English. They're like, if you don't know French, too bad.
Mm-hmm.
The logo, unbelievable. The hidden M in there, the fleur-de-lis, the color scheme of Montreal. And yes, my friends play on Montreal too, and I know I'm a little biased, but I think that one is hands down my favorite. I love the little...
The Victoire logo can... stand up to any logo.
It's sick
in professional sports. Yeah. Like, it is a perfect logo.
We can both agree that's the best
logo wise.
Logo,
name
team,
wise,
colors. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, it's hard to beat them on any level, really.
Let's go through them. So Boston, the Boston team, I did not think was going to be the Fleet. I think they were close to being the Boston Wicked, and I like Fleet.
Look at you,
but. I like their logo with the sideways. It looks like a Hartford Whalers logo. There's a bit of a harbor theme. Obviously, the Boston Harbor is important. Fleet, like a fleet of boats and ships.
I don't mind Fleet. I don't love the logo, though.
Okay. I think it's really cool when you look at it. You kind of turn your head a bit and see this the way that there's the harbor.
Yeah. It's like 90 degrees Hartford.
And green is, I mean, I played for green teams my whole life, so I'm a big fan of green. Okay. I think it works.
And the Boston area generally.
Minnesota Frost. It's giving Gatorade, purple Gatorade, and I kind of love it, though. I love the way that they're leaning into being like the cold state. Why are you laughing?
It's giving Gatorade.
It is giving Gatorade. Look, it's like a purple frost Gatorade. Do you not see that?
I do see it.
And I... think that they're leaning into Superior and like the lake and being cold, and it's Minnesota, so I don't mind it.
It looks like Boston and Minnesota, like the same graphic
designer. They definitely
like they collaborated on that for
they
sure.
They were partners.
It looks like pretty similar, cut from the same cloth in some ways.
So we already praised Montreal to no end.
And Boston and Minnesota are pretty good. Like those are,
I think they're pretty good.
They're good.
So let's go down to the second row here. The Sirens, New York Sirens. So if you're looking at the logo on Sportsnet right now, you can see like the color scheme is really going with all the New York women's teams like Gotham and Liberty. It is like very much in the color scheme of their
teal.
Their team.
Teal action going.
And if you see the Sirens has kind of like a ripple effect of like sound.
Yeah.
And behind that is NY. It's really hard to see, but if you go on their website, they'll tell you about the decision-making process behind all of this. It just doesn't scream hockey logo to me, but I think that that's why I was hesitant. It looks more like a basketball logo. It looks like a Knicks logo.
Yeah, it does look like
it's taken. The colors are awesome, though.
It's also the NY is kind of like the New York Islanders NY on one of their
logos. So they're sharing.
It's kind of like they pulled different ideas from different local sports teams, which I guess is
but that's kind
okay,
of
the, but that's yeah. probably the second worst logo up there.
Okay, so the Ottawa Charge, I'm finding ways to love this one. Okay. And I saw a really funny tweet, and I should give it the person credit, but it was basically like the Cavaliers and the Flames
yes.
had a logo baby.
Kind of like Cars, like the Pixar thing,
it's,
too.
It's it kind of giving, it's kinda giving
kinda
that.
Kind of giving Cars.
But once again, if you go and read about why the C and the O and the logo, like, I get it.
Well, I hope everybody has a rationale.
It's my least favorite.
I don't like the logo at all.
It's my least favorite.
It's like they couldn't decide whether or not they wanted to showcase the O for Ottawa and the C for
Charge.
It's
part of it if you go read about it.
And it's just
it.
Like, hey, we'll just like meet in the middle and almost make one and coherent
the,
logo.
The
or
Toronto
letter.
Scepters look strong. I like how Spooner was like, yeah, a scepter. Like they're going to use that mm-hmm. and it's going to be cool.
I think Toronto's the second best logo.
I'm happy that this saga is over because a whole year of anticipating names and what if it's this and what if it's this. And then obviously you remember last year when those names leaked and I think that those were the names they were going to go with. They trademarked a bunch of names and then they didn't go with those names.
Yeah, you got to be careful letting people know what you're doing
yeah.
without having done it yet because you're going to get a lot of blowback. There probably would have been blowback on this, but you just got to go for it. Like you got to make the decision and go because if you hesitate, you're going to get what yeah. happened last time.
And so I'm glad that we can just move forward. You can already buy this merch online too. So if you liked any of the logos, I know the PWHL is selling them. I know Peace Collective is selling them and Line Change all online. You can go and buy this stuff. It's already sold. Actually, there's some that have already sold out.
I'm surprised you didn't come in with a t-shirt today.
I yeah. was as close to my color as I could. Unfortunately, this is RBC Canadian Open. But I was want to get my hands on something. One thing that they did have was this unbelievable bomber jacket with all the logos. It's like a Letterman jacket. Oh, sold out.
I'm sure you'll find
Christmas is around the corner, so get me one of those. But anyway, congrats. I know it takes a lot of work to go through the process to create logos and names and design it all. What I'm really looking forward to seeing is how they tie it into the jerseys, because that's most important, right? Like how it's going to look on a jersey when Spooner's skating full speed at you, that scepter is going to be scary, okay?
Be honest. You had to Google scepter?
No, I knew what a scepter was. But
did you?
What I've had
you
trouble
being honest?
With... I went to a school where... We had
a scepter,
literally.
Okay.
I can bring it into you. I have basically a scepter.
If you don't, that makes more sense. If you have, you're familiar with the scepter, then you wouldn't have had to Google it. Like
I know what a scepter is, but I think the thing that I'm struggling with, I keep forgetting how to spell it.
It's a sneaky C.
It's
there.
A sneaky C, and the R-E versus E-R.
Oh, we're used to that.
Even Bourne, who we saw Bourne was in the office. He's like, yeah, that spelling is getting me. I'm like. If Bourne is having trouble spelling it, then I feel good.
Giving a lot of credit to Bourne.
Well, he's a writer. He's way more intellectual than us.
I wonder if he's ever worked scepter into copy before. We're going to have to go through the archives
we'll have to
find out.
Anywho, so yes, that's the PWHL. There's still lots to come. Jerseys in about a month or two. So go out and get them. Okay. It was week one is finished at the NFL. Tough day for us in the survivor pool at Sportsnet.
I'm just going to act like it never happened. Like I was never involved.
We have a survivor pool at Sportsnet, and I believe more than 50% of the people picked the Bengals.
Oh, I'd imagine. It's like
we're done.
The Bengals actually ruined survivor pools for pretty much everyone.
It was at least 50% selected in our league.
It's like, okay, so there's two people involved now, the entire league.
So we're hoping to buy back in. So Mark Boffo, our producer of Blair and Barker, can hopefully let us back in. So they were losers, of course, but your biggest loser of the week, besides us, who picked the Bengals,
was the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow. And you know I like to handicap and base opinions on hairstyles, especially for men. I've been doing that for a while.
Wow.
Carlos Alcaraz was winning Wimbledon because he showed up with bad hair. When he showed up with the bleached hair, the crisis haircut before
I was
this season
it,
in training camp, I knew they were in trouble. No, that was a crisis haircut, and this is a crisis right now for the Cincinnati Bengals. You got people like speculating if he's like done, cooked, never be the same because of injuries. He's dealt with so many injuries. And it's definitely possible. You're scoffing at the idea that injuries can derail a career. Injuries have derailed careers before, and it might be happening here with Joe Burrow. It's a nightmare from a personnel standpoint. Jamar Chase whining, the uncertainty moving forward. You lose to the Patriots. You're in a great division. I think the Cincinnati Bengals looking at a really tough schedule immediately. Kansas City lurking. I think they're in loads of trouble. And if Joe Burrow is cooked, we know he's got a huge contract, lots of guaranteed money. That means Cincinnati is going to be gone before they really even arrived after one Super Bowl appearance. I think Cincinnati is the biggest loser of week one, and Joe Burrow most specifically.
Okay. I'm feeling similar, but I think the Cleveland Browns have to be the top of my loser list so far. I mean, they had so much expectations and hope coming off of last year. Great defense. Really only question is Deshaun Watson. And I think we found the answer about somebody that might be cooked. I mean, he looked completely lost. Everyone's talking about how it's truly the worst contract in football. Maybe in pro sports, like that's terrible to be in the same sentence as worst contract in pro sports, but we might be there. And then Browns fans who are finally like feeling hype again and feeling that there's some positivity. You can't think that way after watching that football game.
I think sometimes though, when it's as bad as it could possibly get, it just shows you what you got to do. Mm. This team had five quarterbacks last year and went to the playoffs, had a great record. I think they finished 11-6. Jameis Winston's right there. Because it was so bad, maybe they make the move and maybe the Browns can salvage this.
Well, then they could be the biggest winners of next week if they do that. I also have another biggest loser, Drake. Poor guy. Like, I live in Toronto, okay? But he has had a tough couple months here. Kendrick Lamar now going to be the Super Bowl halftime show. And I think Drake's just catching L's everywhere he goes. Obviously, there's the whole beef, whatever side you're on. Well, Kendrick is going to be at the center of the sporting world again after only, what, 2 or 3 years ago he was on there again. Like, I don't know if I really needed another Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, I don't think I needed it.
But if you're Drake, you just keep losing. So I wonder about the song choices, if there'll be any of the diss tracks. I'm sure there'll be like a little sneaky addition in there. But yeah, L for him.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll find a way.
But it was a good performance when he was there before, Kendrick, with the rest of them. So
it might be a little too much Kendrick for me. Okay, big winner. I think it's Jim Harbaugh, and that's partly because of what I saw on Saturday. Michigan, an absolute mess. Jim Harbaugh wins a championship, leaves, gets a week one victory with Justin Herbert. He seems to have dodged the bullet or what was coming here for the Michigan Wolverines. And I was making a ton of money with the Chargers, who might be pretty good. So Jim Harbaugh, I think my winner of week one.
Also, Drake lost another bet. He bet on that American at the U.S. Open and lost again. Let's make you a big winner. Get some best bets for tonight. Okay, so I want to bring you back to what's on Sportsnet a little later tonight. Sportsnet 1 is going to have the Yankees and the Royals right after us. And then later on, it's going to be Chicago and the Dodgers at 10 o'clock. So it's MVP Central all over Sportsnet. And of course, Blue Jays are up next on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan against the Mets. Okay, so I'm going to pick Ohtani and Judge both to get a home run. They're all on our network. It's perfect timing. So it's like MVPs on Sportsnet parlay. Ohtani and Judge get a home run plus 850.
Gotta be honest. I don't hate that.
Yeah.
Ohtani and Judge plus 850.
You could throw a couple of touchdowns in there too.
Yeah, I'll be locked into Sportsnet 1 tonight. I'll go to the Monday Nighter. Jets. You know I like the Jets. I've been talking a lot about the Jets. Jets on the money line over the San Francisco 49ers is plus 170. Also like Brock Purdy to throw a pick at plus money. And Breece Hall, 100 plus yards, plus 425. Mm-hmm. So I'm all in the Jets. I'll be a little disappointed tomorrow if the Jets don't at least cover. But yeah, I think this is the start of something pretty good for Aaron Rodgers and Gang Green.
Breaking news.
What's that?
Christian McCaffrey is inactive tonight.
Good thing I got those bets in already then.
Thanks, Holly, for telling me that in my ear. Very interesting. Okay, so I almost put him in a parlay, so I'll have to retract that. But that's good. You know why? Who did you have in yours? Breece Hall?
Yeah, I like Breece Hall.
Breece Hall and somebody else, right?
Brock Purdy to throw a pick.
Oh, Brock Purdy. I like Deebo Samuel tonight. I think he's going to have a good game coming off like the Ayuk stuff, especially with the drama.
Might have to be rushing and receiving now without McCaffrey.
Well, I had him locked in before. I didn't put it up on there, but 75 yards rushing and receiving prop was plus money. I might even add that now without McCaffrey because he is going to be getting a lot more touches. Okay. Well, we got Jays up next, too.
You didn't give us a winner week one of the NFL.
Oh, no? Dak. I mean, that's an easy one. I went through, like, it's the simple answer, but yeah, most highest paid player ever in NFL.
Pretty good when you can sign like a
$240 million
$250 million contract and then go out and
then go out and win. So, I mean, that was pretty cool. And a winner was Tyreek for just the celebration that he did.
That's pretty good.
He's getting fined for sure, but it was hilarious.
Maybe he avoided that.
I think he's going to get fined.
Probably.
It was a crazy situation. Anyway, you got Blue Jays up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night.